This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Alarms of a new Auschwitz are sounding, my friends, according to the Jerusalem Post, as we reach this week's International Holocaust Remembrance Day, commemorating the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Let's not miss the alarm bells ringing loudly. Another headline from a commentator on the Jerusalem Post said you'd have sided with Hitler. Global Jewry decries hypocrisy on Holocaust Remembrance Day. Another, the United Nations and NGOs transformed the Holocaust remembrance into hypocrisy. It seems like that is the theme here today on Viewpoint, even as Hamas is emerging from Gaza's tunnels, showing that it never lost control, that Israel is returning with Gaza's north being repopulated, and anti-Semitism that led to the Holocaust is still rampant globally. All of that today on Viewpoint, but much, much more. Wait till you get to what Donald Trump said this weekend. Just wait till you get to what Donald Trump said this weekend. I hope you'll stay tuned, friends, because what he said this weekend is momentous. It is a different kind of momentousness. It was not some presidential declaration. It was not some presidential statement off the record or so on. It was actually a very meaningful and potentially highly eventful statement, realizing that there may be a whole different way to view the whole idea, the whole issue of the so-called Palestinian people and Gaza. So stay tuned, friends. This is Viewpoint. Viewpoint does determine destiny, as always, and we are not in the illusion that our viewpoints don't determine destiny. Our viewpoints always determine destiny. There are no neutral viewpoints. All of our viewpoints, no matter how small or how great, have an effect to actually produce destiny in some way. So, even as we say that, another article has come through today, the long-term dangers of the hostage deal. Well, the hostage deal was the product of viewpoints. It was the product of the idea that we just have to get these hostages out, but we're willing to get them out in a little bit at a time, and in the process, release hundreds, in fact, thousands, potentially, of very, very dangerous terrorists in the process. Does that decision have potential ramifications for destiny and terrible danger? Apparently so, said Stuart Weiss. The long-term dangers of the hostage deal. We'll talk about that here also on the program today. So, let us go back to Auschwitz. Going back to Auschwitz, we find, as waves of anti-Semitic fervor have reached new crescendos right now in the United States and all over the world, especially in the Western world, nobody has asked what warning bells we were trying to sound 80 years ago when we said never again. Tragically, it's become glaringly obvious that violence against Jews can be easily excused and ignored, even in the democratic liberal society we pride ourselves in today. Our generation has missed the warning that Holocaust historians and educators have been sounding for decades. Anti-Semitism is the longest, most continuous prejudice. And leaving this hate unchecked leads to violence against Jews, democracy, and the rule of law. Just look at, friends, our major historic universities that became explosive demonstrations of anti-Semitism and Jew hatred, all by those who supposedly the most educated folk, the most likely to produce American leadership in the world at Harvard or Princeton or Yale or any of these universities, and all of a sudden there an explosion of anti-Semitism. So whatever happened to the phrase never again? Whatever happened to it? Did it have any meaning? Or was it just, were they just mere words? Because apparently they never connected in the heart, and certainly have not connected in the heart of young people today, or even millennials, or even many who are older, who actually fostered and fomented all of this in American universities and colleges as university professors. So it appears that our generation has missed the warning that Holocaust historians and educators have been sounding for decades. We may have missed the warning that sounded 80 years ago, says this writer. Today, less than 1,000 Auschwitz survivors remain alive to share their testimonies. Most of them are poor as church mice and can barely eat. So this writer says, let's not miss the alarm bells ringing today so loudly. But we are missing those. And the reason we're missing them is because the heart of the people is not aligned with never again. It's a general phrase, and it has a kind of emotional ring to it that most of us can agree to. But in general, the spirit of that does not exist across the world. In fact, quite the contrary. Anti-Semitism exploding across the world everywhere you look, and especially in the Western countries that purport to be the engines of democracy and the rule of law and justice for all, but not so much for the Jewish people. Does it matter? Indeed, it does. As far as this broadcaster is concerned, it matters greatly. A headline came out from International News today. Anti-Semitism that led to the Holocaust is still rampant globally. The virulent anti-Semitism that led to the Holocaust is still rampant around the globe today, said the World Jewish Congress President Ronald Lauder in the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz and Birkenau. So, is it true? Is it not true? He said, in a fundamental way, a common thread links what happened at Auschwitz to the recent manifestations of Jew hatred, including October 7th, 2023, the terror attacks on Israel, the age-old hatred of Jews. Anti-Semitism had its willing supporters then, and it has them now. It was fed by the indifference of people who thought they were not affected because they were not Jewish. So Ambassador Lauder also stressed that anti-Semitic acts undermine the central tenets of civil society. These attacks are not just targeting Jews, he said. They are an attack on Judeo-Christian values, which are the bedrock of Western civilization. I agree. So apparently, what's happening via anti-Semitism that is rapidly taking the form of persecution of Christians is actually an open attack against Western civilization and its foundation on Judeo-Christian values. Do you agree? We'll be back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
The UN and NGOs, non-governmental organizations, transform the Holocaust remembrance into hypocrisy. So it might as well be renamed Holocaust Hypocrisy Day, while the other 364 days are devoted to the slogans of genocide, inversion, and other forms of Jew hatred. That's the article that came out of the Jerusalem Post today. January 27th is designated in many countries and the United Nations as International Holocaust Remembrance Day, marking the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau Nazi death camp. This year, which is the 80th anniversary, there are going to be a number of ceremonies in memory of the 6 million Jewish victims, one-third of the entire Jewish population in the world at that time. Many righteous speeches will be made with pledges of never again and warnings about the dangers of anti-Semitism. But in stark contrast to these pious words stands the incomprehensible hypocrisy of genocide inversion. That is the vile accusation that in defending its citizens against a repetition of October 7th mass atrocities, Israelis have become the new Nazis. It's a heinous demonization in the 21st century version of Jew hatred that led to the very institutions that created after the Shoah, or that is the Holocaust, ostensibly to promote human rights and prevent injustice. So what we're looking at here is agencies and the UN itself actually facilitating a viewpoint and an attitude that is contrary to the very thing they support, say they are supporting and trying to Holocaust remembrance. Actually, they're actually facilitating the spirit of another Holocaust. In other words, everything Jewish has to be denied, has to be come against, has to become railroaded, has to become the object of scorn and rebuke, and yes, even international condemnation. That's what's happening. So in reality, in my opinion, it's a precursor to the total fulfillment of the prophecy of Zechariah when it says that all the nations shall come against Israel. All the nations shall come against Jerusalem. All basically means all, doesn't it? So in other words, the United Nations is the collection of all the nations, 196 of a total of something like 206 nations, all the nations. And the United Nations represents those nations coming against Israel today and has been coming against Israel for several decades, making accusations, false accusations, attributing to Israel all of the ills of the world, all of the injustices of the world, and therefore trying to bring the International Criminal Court indictments against the president or the prime minister of Israel and its other representatives and so on. This is the United Nations, united against Israel. And it's only going to metastasize ever more deeply, like a cancer that begins with small cancer cells and then begins to multiply and multiply throughout the body until you reach a point where there is no return. There is no remedy. The cancer explodes out of the body, so to speak, and becomes a death warrant. That's what's happening, even while we say never again. So, we're going to be taking a look at this matter of Gaza and where that stands right now, and there is much to be said there on this at this Holocaust Remembrance Week. And another article by Danielle Grayman Kennard says you'd have sided with Hitler. Global Jewry decries hypocrisy on Holocaust Remembrance Day. Now, by the way, there are those who say, well, are you suggesting that Israel's perfect, that Israel is not subject to different views and so on, to correct attitudes and behavior and so on? No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that at all, any more than I'm saying that America is not subject to such criticism or such views. But then again, the views have to be based not on some secular worldview, but on a biblical view, because God is the one who ordained Israel as the apple of his eye, a chosen people, He gave the meets and bounds of Israel from Lebanon, southern Lebanon, all the way down to Egypt, the river of Egypt, and then from the Mediterranean Sea all the way over to the Euphrates River. Now, guess what places of land those dimensions cover? Southern Lebanon, where Hezbollah has been launching rockets into Israel, includes the Golan Heights, includes large portions of Syria, bordering up to the Euphrates River, includes the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, and also the Gaza Strip. All of that area, friends, is what God himself, by his own words that he could not take back, otherwise he would be a liar, God deeded that land to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. If you disagree, you disagree with God. You disagree with the Bible. You say, I believe the Bible from cover to cover and the cover too. No, you don't, because the Bible makes it very clear. God made it very clear that he deeded all of that land. He gave an eternal leasehold because God claimed it as his land. He didn't say it was Israel's land. He said it was his land. And so he gave an eternal leasehold to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Not Ishmael, but Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We need to understand that. If you cannot accept that, then you must reconcile with God. There's no reconciling with the United Nations because they don't agree. There's no recognizing with the International Criminal Court because they don't agree. They have a secular view, and their view is totally contrary to the word, will, and the ways of God. They do not accept any authority from the creator of the universe. They believe, like Charles Darwin, that we self-created, that we just emerged from primordial slime and became what we are today. Just advanced gorillas or whatever. So if you deny the authority of the Word of God, you necessarily get into this conundrum. You see, viewpoint does determine destiny. If you agree with what God has said in his Word on every point, then your viewpoint is established in accordance, parallel to what, or not even parallel, but congruent with what God has said. In other words, there's no difference between what God has said and what you believe and say yourself. Now, if you say something different, in whole or in part, then your words, your viewpoint, your thoughts, your attitudes are not congruent with God's, which means you are elevating yourself to be equal with God, which is exactly what Satan did. He said, I'm so great, I'm entitled to be equal with God. I'll ascend to the heights of the north. I will be like the Most High. Ain't nobody going to tell me what to do, not even God. I know what I'm doing, and that's how humankind thinks. It's the Frank Sinatra mantra. I'll do it my way. Thank you very much. I'll do it my way, God. There was once a fellow by the name of Ken Henderson who was a wonderful emulator of Elvis Presley. And every year we would go to a special event for a fall fair here in the general Richmond, Virginia area. And Ken Henderson would come up from, I think it was North or South Carolina, and he would do a lot of Elvis Presley songs and so on. Well, one of those, in fact, many of them were Christian songs because Ken Henderson was a Christian. So one of the songs that he did constantly during his performances was the song of Frank Sinatra, I'll Do It My Way. Very dramatic. It's an amazing song. Very, very dramatic. Who could not like the song, the music, the crescendos in it? It's just quite amazing. But, of course, the refrain is, I did it my way. I did it my way. Well, that is a declaration of eternal arrogance. That is the ultimate chutzpah. And that is the position of the majority of the world today. That's the position of those in the United Nations. That's the position of those bigwigs that are heading up the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, in the last several days. That's the position. That was the position, by the way, of the entire Obama and Biden administrations. They didn't care what the Bible had to say. It was irrelevant. They had their own agenda. And now there's a different sheriff in town who seems to be more aligned with what God has said, even though he may not be a spiritually minded man. That's not for me, ultimately, to be the judge. But what I can discern is what he's doing that aligns itself with what God has said. And you're going to find in the next segment of the program something very dramatic that he said this week, this weekend. Indeed, it is high drama at the OK Corral. Its implications are vast. But for the moment, we're dealing with this matter of whether or not we're siding with Hitler or whether the world is siding with Hitler. Global Jewry decries the hypocrisy on Holocaust Remembrance Day. Indeed, it is massive hypocrisy. Saying one thing never again, but conducting ourselves in a radically different way. Choosing others over what God, other decisions or other viewpoints over what God has said. However rational we may think we are. You see, that's our problem, isn't it? We think we're so cool, so intelligent, so knowledgeable, that we have a view of history that just goes way beyond anything that God possibly could contemplate. We say, times have changed. Of course they've changed. God knew they were going to change. In fact, he told us exactly what was going to happen, that times were going to change. Read about it in Matthew chapter 24. Read about it in the book of Daniel. Read about it in the book of Revelation. Times are changing, and we're at a time when history is reaching its final hour. I was just writing about that today in my new book, The Power to Overcome. You say, well, boy, do we ever need that. When is that going to come out? Well, probably at least a year from now. It's going to take me a long time to write this book. Because it has to be persuasive in the minds and hearts of people, particularly Christians, who are not prepared to be overcomers. They're just not prepared. And so somebody has to come along to woo, to warn, to coach, to be a, shall we say, an end-time spiritual coach, to exhort God's people as to how to become an overcomer and how to detect and discern what it is we have to overcome. And our world has become so confused. Our world has become so chaotic that in many respects, we actually embrace the ways of the world in order to win the world, and we call it the new evangelism. It's amazing how twisted our viewpoints can get. And we justify it. We rationalize it. We're experts at rationalizing and justifying that which is contrary to the word, will, and ways of God. So then let me ask you a question. What do you do with Gaza as maybe a million people are now flooding back into the north of Gaza that is totally demolished? What's to happen there? Would God's viewpoint have anything to say to it? And how about
there is
Trump?
So much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived, Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Question, have you been telling your friends, Romans and countrymen, so to speak, of the program? You value the program. You listen to it regularly. Have you been telling your friends about it, how they can gain access to it, either by listening on terrestrial radio, wherever you listen, or that they can listen via our website, saveus.org, where the program is up there every night and up there usually for about a year, or through podcasts. They can access various podcasts through our website, saveus.org, and other podcast sites out there that are well known. So are you telling your friends, Romans and countrymen, about it? You see, that's how you can make a difference. You can help spread the message that you value. Now, not everybody is going to accept it. You know that. But that's okay. Not everybody accepted Jesus' message either, did they? Or the Apostle Paul's message. They met with a lot of resistance. So will you. But you still should still try to get the message out, because people need it. People don't just need the Lord. They need the Lord's wisdom and understanding and direction and viewpoint concerning our times, and how to conform. That's what they need. So, in order to help that along, I have written a number of books. I've written 11 now, the most recent being When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. Do you think these might be perilous times? If you don't think they're perilous times, you probably have one eye that's totally blind and refuse to see out of the other one. Either that or you've got your head in the sand, because it's so obvious. We're living in perilous times. More and more Christian pastors and leaders are coming to grips with the admission, which they did not want to make. They have refused to try to make this admission, that indeed we're living in the last days. At some point in these last days, the latter point of the last days, and we need to get ready. So the book, When Persecution Comes. Is persecution coming? Yes, it's already here. But it's just not here in the viral stage, the vicious stage, that it is in, say, Iran, or Saudi Arabia, or China, or in Nigeria, or in North Korea, and so on. Yes, it's vicious there. But it is moving. The spirit of anti-Semitism and persecution is metastasizing greatly, like a cancer. And it's moving quickly around the world, including the Western world, Europe, and the Americas, including North America, the United States of America. So God in his mercy says, look, I want the people to know. I want them to be prepared. And he put it upon my heart to write this book. It's a book of mercy and compassion to help us all to be prepared for the difficult times that are coming, and to help moms and dads and grandparents to be able to prepare their children and their grandchildren and not just sit there twiddling their thumbs idly, thinking that everything's going to go on as business as usual. It's not going to happen that way. If it were, Jesus wouldn't have warned us. His apostles wouldn't have warned us. They wanted us to be ready. So the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, is right there on the website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. If you're writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. It barely covers our costs. Barely. So, get a copy of the book. You might have relatives or friends that you care for. You might care for a pastor that needs to have that information. You think he does already. No, he doesn't. If he did, he would be preaching about it. But he needs to be informed. He needs to be urged. He needs to be have it in front of his eyeballs so that he can be a true agent of God's blessing to prepare his people, those that are trusting him to prepare the way. So get a copy for him. When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. Okay, let's talk about some of the long-range dangers of the hostage deal. This very day, it's been revealed that of the 30 hostages that were supposed to be released, at least 8 of them are already dead. At least 8 are already dead. So what does that tell us about the other 65 or 68 that are yet to be talked about to be released? You can see right there some of the long-term dangers of the hostage deal. It's a ruse. It's not what it seems to be. It's a device for Hamas to get back all of its agents, its vicious, terroristic agents that are in Israeli prisons, to get them back in the Hamas workforce to bring terror, more terror upon Israel. And as we speak, the reports are that Hamas is emerging, the Hamas agents are emerging from the tunnels. Here's a report right here from Jerusalem Post. Hamas emerges from Gaza tunnels, showing it never lost control. Hamas has impressive control over every aspect of Gaza, from local media to hospitals and schools. It will galvanize all this to help portray this as a victory for the group. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're claiming they got victory. Khamenei there in Iran is claiming that Hamas, and therefore the Iranian system that they're putting together to attack and destroy Israel, has been victorious. That's a viewpoint, friend. That is their viewpoint. So they have no intention of giving up. So the long-term dangers of the hostage deal involve the release of all of these violent criminals, terrorists, that are intent and sworn to the destruction of Israel. And in exchange for a few, precious few, so far, what is it, 4 that have been released? And now, the plan, whatever the plan is, the decisions that have to be made for the release of yet further hostages has not yet been accomplished. It's all set to be still discussed. So all of this really is a pretense. There's hardly any reality to it. It was all driven by emotionalism. Yes, indeed, parents and grandparents and people who loved those who were taken hostage. No wonder. I mean, if it were my child, I would have a tremendous love and emotion and attachment, want to see them released. But there's a bigger picture. Israel has always looked at the bigger picture, the long game. And right now, because of outside pressure from the Western world, including the former Biden administration, including the International Criminal Court, including the United Nations, and including many non-governmental organizations, they're putting such pressure on that it's forcing Israel, or causing Israel's leaders, to do unwise things for the long run, to enter into agreements that are potentially damning for the future of Israel and its people. Just laying it out there. Can Israel return to war with Gaza's north repopulated? The north is becoming repopulated very quickly now. Displaced Palestinians are making their way back to their homes in the northern Gaza Strip. That is, whatever homes still are standing. Keeping them in southern Gaza was the single largest bargaining chip that Israel had to hold over Hamas, far larger than whether it remains in the Philadelphia corridor or not. As long as they were not in northern Gaza, Hamas could not claim to truly have control over its own territory, even if it remained stronger than any other local Palestinian group. But displaced Palestinians are making their way back to their homes in the northern Gaza Strip today. So what would it mean for Israel to return to war with 1 million or more Palestinians back in northern Gaza? Just think what would happen with regard to world opinion, United Nations, hyper-liberals in the United States, and so on, that have no love for the Word of God, do not accept the Jewish people as God's chosen people, in fact, rebel against the idea. What do you do? Well, out of that comes a word from Donald Trump. It happened this weekend. President Donald Trump said he would like to see Jordan, Egypt, and other Arab nations increase the number of Palestinian refugees that they are accepting from the Gaza Strip, potentially moving out enough of the population to just clean out the Gaza Strip, the war-torn area, to create a virtually clean slate. Wow. That took some chutzpah to say that. Why and what are its implications? We'll be back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Perhaps America has never seen a president of all the 47 presidents, a president who had more chutzpah than Donald J. Trump. Now, I'm not here to glorify him. I'm not here to give him a messianic halo or anything like that, just to acknowledge that for some reason, whether it's the special anointing of the Lord or what it is, for some reason, he has endured the most incredible, unbelievable, unprecedented assaults against his life, against his business and economic, against his family, against his reputation, and has emerged to become the 47th president of the United States, out of which in a mere 5 or 6 days, he has advanced executive orders, taking away 78 of the previous executive orders of the previous administration, and advancing many, many others to rectify the problems that are existing in the country, to set the stage and declare the trajectory for truth that would make changes that we could really believe in, that the world could really believe in, even to the point, friends, of dealing with the Gaza Strip and Hamas in a very different way. You see, viewpoint does determine destiny. The way previous presidents have dealt with this, whether they're Republican or Democrat, was not to admit God's meets and bounds that were given to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but to take as real, as true, as something to be protected, that which had occurred contrary to God's word, will, and ways, and then somehow support it as if it should be supported, i.e., a so-called Palestinian state, of which there never was any such thing in history, ever. The word Palestine wasn't even used, really, until the Romans took over. So, this matter of the Palestinian state, or whether it should be one or not one, has been a big deal on the geopolitical front in all the politics of the world. It's been the source of great, great struggle and the loss of many, many lives. Donald Trump now says he would like to see Jordan, Egypt, and other Arab nations increase the number of Palestinian refugees they are accepting from the Gaza Strip, potentially moving out enough of the population to just clean out the war-torn area to create a virtual clean slate. During a 20-minute question and answer session Saturday with reporters aboard Air Force One, Trump said he had ended his predecessor's hold on sending 2,000-pound bombs to Israel. He said, "We released them today of the bombs. They've been waiting for them for a long time." He was asked why he lifted the ban, and he said, "Because Israel paid for them. They bought them." Trump has built his political career, in many respects, around being unapologetically pro-Israel. On his larger vision for Gaza, Trump said he had called earlier in the day with King Abdullah II of Jordan and would speak Sunday, that was yesterday, with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt. Trump said, "I'd like Egypt to take people, and I'd like Jordan to take people. You're taking about probably 1.5 million people. We just clean out that whole thing." So what is Trump saying? Look, these are Arab people, and you Arab nations, Jordan and Egypt, needs to step up to the plate and do what you should have done from the beginning, to take your Arab brothers into your country and stop playing this game of isolating out a so-called Palestinian group of people for your own political purposes. Trump said, "You're talking probably 1.5 million people. We just clean out the whole thing." So he uses language that's very akin to a blue-collar worker. Common people. He doesn't talk in big, glittering words because he's not that kind of a person. He's not an intellectual, per se. He's very smart. He has savvy beyond most intellectuals. But he's not an intellectual, so he doesn't speak like one. He speaks in a very common way, and lurking within the words, simple phrases like, well, we're talking about potentially moving out enough of the population to just clean out the war-torn area to create a virtual clean slate. What's he really saying? Get rid, take all the Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip and remove them to Jordan or Egypt or both. That's what he's saying. I'd like Egypt to take people, and I'd like Jordan to take people, he said. You're talking probably about 1.5 million people. We're just going to clean out the whole thing. Notice he didn't say, I'm hoping we can think about it. He said, we're just going to do it. Oh. Well, he said a lot of things we're just going to do, right? Question, is he doing it? Absolutely. And that's what makes the difference. He's doing what he says. He's not like the other politicians, Republican or Democrat. He's actually keeping his word. And what's happening around the world? Well, Colombia, the president of Colombia just decided that he was going to cooperate with Donald Trump because Trump said, look, if you don't take back all of these people that have come to our country illegally from Colombia, if you don't take them back, I'm going to hit you with a 25% tariff. Guess what? He just decided, that is Colombia's president just decided to send airplanes to the United States to take those people back that he had refused to take back. The same is going to happen with other countries. That's part of what the tariffs are all about, friends. Mr. Trump knows how to do business. He knows how to deal a deal with people and what it is that moves them. Our politicians are so pusillanimous, they can't even begin to hold a candle against others that know what they're doing. And so they played games with the nations of the world, with the UN, with the International Criminal Court, with the World Economic Forum. They just played games with them. Not anymore. Trump delivered an address directly to the elites at Davos last week. He said, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to do this globalist game anymore. And that's why they hate him, because he refuses to do the globalist game. They hated him from the very beginning in 2015 when he came down the escalator and declared, we're going to make America great again. They said, not on our watch. We're going to have a globalist government. Donald Trump says, no way, no how. Not on my watch. And so they despise him. They tried to destroy him. They tried to kill him. They tried to destroy his personal business. They tried to destroy his family. They tried to destroy everything. And still would like to. But now he's in control. Oh. And he's actually doing what he said without fear. Without fear. Now, you have to have a certain level of faith to be able to deal without fear. And apparently, Donald Trump has faith that he's going to be able to accomplish these things because, as he said, I believe that God saved my life for a reason. Question, has God saved your life for a reason? Do you have a reason to exist? Do you have the faith that goes along with it? Do you have the holy boldness to be able to do what God would have you to do? Or are you just, wringing your hands and whining and crying and say, I don't have anything that God would have me to do. I don't. No. Every one of us has a calling, has a thing to do. So, this article goes on to say, such a drastic displacement of people would openly contradict Palestinian identity and deep connection to Gaza. Indeed, it would. But what is the deep connection to Gaza? It goes back to 1948. 1947, 1948, when Israel became a nation. And the Arab nations, Jordan and Egypt and others, said, look, to these Palestinian people, that is what we call Palestinian people today. He said, look, we're going to come in and we're going to wipe Israel off the map. And so you leave Jerusalem, you leave Judea and Samaria, you leave, and we're going to come in and we're going to push Israel into the sea, and then you're going to come back and you're going to own it all. Didn't work that way. Israel won. And those Arab nations that made all those promises to the people now called Palestinian people refused to do anything about it. In fact, they decided to use those people as a political weapon against Israel throughout the world. And that's what's happened. So Trump says, look, there have been many conflicts in this area over the centuries. So resettling them could be temporary or long-term. But something has to happen, said Donald Trump. It's literally a demolition site right now. So I'd rather get involved with some of the Arab nations and build housing in a different location where they could be made live in peace for a change. Jordan's foreign minister says, no way. He told reporters that his country's rejection of the proposed transfer of Palestinians was firm and unwavering. Well, that's exactly what the president of Colombia said until he got faced with a 25% tariff. Trump has offered non-traditional views of the future of Gaza in the past. He suggested after he was inaugurated that Gaza was really got to be rebuilt in a different way. Trump's action comes as he celebrated the first phase of a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel that has paused the fighting and seen the release of some hostages, like four, in return for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. Negotiations have yet to begin in earnest on the more difficult second phase of the deal. If the remaining hostages are not released, the Israeli government has threatened to resume its war against Hamas. Okay. Then what would happen? Donald Trump knows what would happen. The world will get all up in arms again. Israel's committing genocide, even though they're trying to control and keep from having another October 7th. So Mr. Trump says, look, he didn't put it in these terms, but I'm going to put it in these terms. When Israel was formed, before Israel was formed as a nation in 1948, the United Nations established Transjordan. The very purpose for establishing Transjordan, now called Jordan, as a nation, a new nation, was to take on all of those Arab people. Guess what? They refused to do it. Now Donald Trump says, okay, that's what it was for in the first place. Get with the program. You're going to take them back. What say you? What do you think is going to happen, my friends? It's going to happen. In some way, it's going to happen. Get ready. A lot of changes on the way in the Middle East. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.